about?
No. It tells us that this establishment had kennels, but that dogs were not allowed in the 136 rooms. Also, that we are but 15 miles from the campus of the University of Southwestern Louisiana. Their library would be a trove of interest, Ryan. It is probably intact, if vandals have not destroyed it.
You can't eat books, Doc.
There is a witty response to that rational observation, Mr. Corder, but it escapes me for the moment.
He opened his hand, allowing the booklet to flutter to the carpet, like the last dead leaf from an irradiated tree. And so the morning passed. Doc went and curled up in a corner, sleeping like a child. JB vanished for an hour and returned to tell Ryan that he thought it might be possible to start an emergency electrical generator.
Better than the flashlights. Shall I try?
Why not?
Ryan wandered the deserted corridors, encountering the occasional skeleton, and tried to fathom what it must have been like back before the nuke winter. In the corner of the motel where the fallen tree had hit, termites had tunneled in, undermining the foundations and making one entire wing dangerous. There were huge cracks in the walls and ceilings. Ryan gazed out through the glass, which had been dulled over the 100 years of scouring action of the wind. He looked out across the oily waters that snaked around the building to the towering live oaks that obscured the nearby road. The sky was clouding over again. From old books, Ryan had learned that in olden times the weather was often the same for days on end. Bright and sunny through the summers, clear and crisply cold through the winter. That was hard to imagine. Ever since his youth at his father's Villa Front Royal back in Virginia, he'd known the weather only to change rapidly, within hours, perhaps a dozen times in a single day. A sunny sky would be soon overtaken with chem clouds, and violent storms would soon erupt, quickly flooding rivers and canals. In parts of the Deathlands, the winds and acid rain could strip the skin from a person in minutes. There might be snow in July in what had been called Arizona, and blistering heat around the sculpted peak of Mount Washington in the far north on a January morning. Here, deep in the south, humidity and a clinging, sweating heat seemed the order on most days. Fortunately, it was cooler inside the motel. Looking out the window, Ryan saw huge insects, wings iridescent, dart over the warm streams. Far to the north, there was the familiar jagged lace of purple lightning. The rumble of thunder never reached him. Realizing that the double-paned windows might also prevent him from hearing warning shots from Christie and the others, he moved quickly to the main entrance, pushed open the stiff glass doors, and emerged into the warm, damp morning. Immediately, Ryan heard the swamp wag engines. It came from the suburb of West Lowellton, not too far away, where his three companions had gone scavenging. He spun on his heel and sprinted into the echoing lobby.
JB! Doc! Front door!
Returning to the arched entrance, he flattened himself against the red brick wall.
What is it? Shots?
No, listen.
Wags. Those swamp buggies. Real close. Half mile, maybe less.
Doc Tanner approached briskly. His Lamar pistol was tucked into his belt like a pirate, and his hat was at a rakish angle.
I fear I slumbered, and I can hear engines. It sounds like those
swamp wags, Doc. Yeah.
Go or stay?
Stay. It figures they may be searching for us. With six of us running around, they double their chances of getting us.
And cut the odds in half.
Yeah, it does. But we stay.
Should we not be looking for a defensive position in the event of their coming here?
It was a difficult decision. Judging by the noise of the engines, there were at least a half dozen of the floundering buggies in the vicinity. That could mean 30 or 40 men, maybe more. It didn't much matter if they were Cajuns or the Baron's set guards. A firefight out in the open would have only one ending. But if they waited in the motel, they could cause untold havoc among any attackers, perhaps stand a better chance. Overlaying the rumbling of the swamp wags was the noise of gunfire. JB looked at Ryan.
If they got them cold, they're chilled by now. If not, they'll make it out of there. Best we can do is wait and see.
That's how I see it, too.
Those young girls! Stout-hearted Finnegan! By the three Kennedys, gentlemen! Can we stand here and allow them to be slaughtered?
Yeah, Doc, we can.
Yeah, Doc. We go after them, and we're there with too little too fucking late. Don't think I don't care about Laurie or that fat tub of Getz Finnegan. And you know how much I care about Christy Roth. But in this life, there's only one real certainty. Fuck up and you lose.
But they may be killed!
We can't do anything about it, Doc.
Gunfire crackled for about 2.5 minutes. Then came the unmistakable shot cracks of a couple of stun guns, then more gunfire for around 1/2 minute. Then, just the Swamp Wag's throaty roar.
Let's find a place where we can blast them if they come this way.
You think they might have been killed? Or taken?
Yeah. Maybe they'll take what they got and pull out. Maybe not. All we can do is listen and wait. If they aren't here in an hour, I guess it means they're not coming. Not yet, anyway.
Ryan chose the kennels. Partly outside, they were connected to the motel, and also gave them access to some low scrub that concealed a dry riverbed stretching southwest. The three of them went there, waiting and listening, their blasters cocked and ready. There was no further shooting. Soon, the buggies could be heard drifting away, seemingly toward the main part of the swamps. Within 1/2 hour, the natural sounds of insects and the wind in the live oaks had resumed. The clouds that had threatened rain earlier in the morning had broken up, leaving only a veil of high, thin mist that filtered the sun into an orange blur.
Ryan, let's go see what happened.
Wait, Doc. Keep quiet and wait. Don't move or speak till I say so.
Time crawled by. Ryan tried to keep his mind off Christy Roth, her face, voice, body. The only woman who'd ever meant more than a fleeting moment of animal passion to him. Common sense told him that along with Lori and Finn, she had probably been killed. The Sekhmen of the Baron, with their superior firepower, had slaughtered them all. Unless
he wanted prisoners.
It was a hope, the best he had. It was 7 minutes past noon by Ryan's wrist chron. At 12, he and the others had decided to go and find out what had gone down on the edges of West Lowellton. And likely to bury their dead. If Christy, Lori, and Finn had been taken, it wasn't going to do them any good to rush in like a blinded steer charging into the shambles. It was still 7 minutes off noon when Ryan caught the whisper of stealthy movement somewhere behind them, inside the motel. He shrank back into the narrow stone kennel, fingering the trigger of the Heckler & Koch. The noise sounded like the plastic end of a blind pull tapping on glass in the wind. But the wind had fallen, and the air was still. The tapping came again.
It's Finn. Cover me, JB, while I make a run for the door. Then Doc, then you.
In 30 seconds, they were all safe inside the motel, the security door locked behind them, the steel bolt thrown across it.
Finn! Finnegan, we're here!
They heard footsteps moving slowly toward them along the corridor, from the direction of the games room in the main entrance.
That you, Finn? Speak up!
It's me! Yeah, it's me! Only me.
Finnegan was one of the toughest of all of the traitor's longtime blasters. He'd been in more firefights than he'd spent nights in bed. He drained most of a quart of Jim Beam, then spat on the floor, wiping the back of a blood-stained hand across his mouth.
Now?
Yeah, okay. I heard him coming. Christy heard him first, but there was a lot of the fuckers. 10 or more of those fat, tired mothers looked like someone had seen us and told the bear.